Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Cardinals Created. Listen to our full report on Saturday's consistory in the Vatican, during which Pope Benedict elevated 24 prelates from around the world to the rank of cardinal. Day of Prayer and Reflection. We report on Friday's special meeting of the College of Cardinals convened by Pope Benedict to discuss a range of topics including religious freedom around the world, clerical sex abuse, Anglican converts, and liturgy in the life of the Church today. New Cardinals' Views. In the run-up to the consistory, three of the new cardinals shared with us their thoughts on their lives and careers and their vision of the Church and the challenges facing it. And the Glory of Giotto, a grime-covered crucifix stored for years in a church sacristy in Florence, has been brought back to life following a major restoration, with most experts now convinced it is the work of the 14th century artist Giotto. Pope Benedict created 24 new cardinals from around the world during a public consistory on Saturday in the Vatican. Charles Collins reports.
During a solemn public consistory in St. Peter's Basilica, Pope Benedict read the names of the 24 new cardinals in Latin.
Angelum amato, archiepiscopum titulo silensem, Antonium Nagy, patriarcham Alexandrinum coptorum, Robertum Zara, archiepiscopum emeritum conacriensem, Francisco Monterisi, archiepiscopum titulo albanensem maritimum.
The new group of cardinals includes heads of Vatican dicasteries, archbishops of major cities in Europe, Africa, Asia, and the Americas, and retired prelates honored for their lifelong service to the Church. Pope Benedict told the men they must devote themselves totally to the Church and to Christ.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, che oggi fate corona ai nuovi cardinali,
in his homily, he asked the faithful to pray for them, saying, "Let the Lord's Spirit support these new cardinals in the commitment of service to the Church, picking up the cross of Christ, even if necessary, to shed their own blood." The Pope reminded the cardinals that all are called and all are aided by divine grace, adding that this is their security. Just listen again to the words of Jesus asking, "Come, follow me." Only by returning to this original vocation is it possible to understand our mission in the Church as true disciples. This is the third consistory in Pope Benedict's pontificate. In the current College of Cardinals, he has named 59 members. I'm Charles Collins.
On the eve of Saturday's consistory, the prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith said the Vatican is preparing new guidelines to fight clerical sexual abuse. Cardinal William Lavada said the guidelines are intended to provide a coordinated and effective program of child protection and for dealing with allegations of sexual abuse by the clergy. Cardinal Lavada's remarks came during a special day of prayer and reflection on Friday for cardinals, convened by the Pope to discuss a range of topics facing the Church. Emma McCarthy reports.
Cardinal Angelo Sodano, Dean of the College of Cardinals, began the one-day session by welcoming the Pope on behalf of all 150 cardinals present and thanking him for the recent beatification of Cardinal Newman and the introduction of a similar cause for beatification for the late Cardinal Van Thuan to the glory of the Church in Vietnam. Pope Benedict then took the floor, giving a brief introduction to the two main topics for discussion in the morning session, religious freedom and the liturgy in the life of the Church. The Holy Father recalled that the mandate of the Lord to proclaim the gospel implies the need for the freedom to do so, and yet, in the course of history, it has met several obstacles. The relationship between truth and freedom is essential, he said, but now faces the challenge of relativism, which at first glance seems to complete the concept of freedom, but in reality threatens to destroy it, like a veritable dictatorship. He said we find ourselves in a time where we must work hard to assert the freedom to proclaim the truth of the gospel and the great achievements of Christian culture. As to the second theme, the Pope recalled the crucial importance of the liturgy in the Church because it is the place of God's presence with us, thus the place where truth lives. The topic of church freedom today was introduced by Cardinal Bertone, Secretary of State, and the theme of the liturgy in the life of the Church by Cardinal Canizares, Prefect of the Congregation for Divine Worship. Cardinal Bertone gave an overview of today's attempts to limit freedom of Christians in various regions of the world, asking his audience to reflect on the situation of religious freedom in Western countries, nations often deeply indebted to Christianity for their identity and culture, but which today witness a process of secularization with attempts to exclude spiritual values from society. Then he underscored the situation of religious freedom in Muslim countries, pointing out the conclusions reached by the recent Synod of Bishops for the Middle East. Finally, he presented the activities of the Holy See and local bishops' conferences, both in the East and West, in defense of religious freedom. Following lunch in the afternoon session, Cardinal William Leveda, Prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, illustrated the Church's response to cases of child abuse by clergy and norms issued by the Holy See to welcome Anglicans into the Catholic Church. I'm Emer McCarthy.
On Sunday, November the 21st, which is the Solemnity of Christ the King, Pope Benedict will preside at a concelebrated Mass with the new cardinals, during which he will give them the cardinal's ring. Saturday's consistory leaves the College of Cardinals with 203 members, a new record. Of those, 121 are under the age of 80 and hence eligible to vote in a conclave to elect a new pope. But what are the feelings and views of some of the new cardinals who were elevated this weekend? We sat down with three of them just before the consistory to find out more about their lives and careers. An American canon lawyer, Cardinal Raymond Burke, heads the Apostolic Signatura, the Vatican's highest tribunal, and before that served as Archbishop of St. Louis in the U.S. He told Tracy McClure he was not exactly overjoyed when, as a young priest, he was asked by his bishop to go to Rome to study canon law.
I have to say that when I first began studying canon law, there wasn't a great deal of enthusiasm about it. In my years in the seminary, the teaching of canon law was very sparse. It was that whole period between the two codes, and also if the rebelliousness of the late 60s and early 70s can be seen anywhere, it can certainly be seen in the kind of disregard and disdain for canon law. I have to say I never disdained it, but there weren't a lot of examples of a great esteem for canon law. But thanks be to God, when I arrived at the Gregorian University, there were some wonderful professors, and one in particular became a mentor of mine. And with time, I began to really understand the importance of canon law and to enter very deeply into the study. And I'm very happy to this day that the bishop made that decision, even if at the time it didn't appear to me to be what I really wanted to do.
So you think it was rather providential in a way?
I do. I have to say that about my whole priestly life, and I don't mean this in some kind of pietistic way, but I've tried since that time to always do whatever the bishop asked, and I have to say that I have never been unhappy, and I've seen so much providence in all of the different assignments which I've had, none of which I must say I could have foreseen when I was in the seminary.
But you must miss teaching a bit.
I do. I enjoyed teaching very much. I come from a family of teachers. My mother was a teacher, and I loved teaching very much. That was probably one of the hardest things to give up when I came to do the studies in canon law, and even now returning to Rome as prefect of the Apostolic Signatura, I don't have those normal occasions to teach the faithful that I would have had as a diocesan bishop. So we learn in the priestly life that sometimes you have to give up good things in order to do what you're asked.
You are obviously a very busy man. You're, like you said, you're the prefect of the Apostolic Signatura, but you're also with the Congregation for Bishops and the Congregation for the Causes of Saints. So it seems like you're constantly being asked to discern what is best for the Church and who you think are the best models role models for the faithful. What would you say are the challenges that these various positions pose for you?
Well, both the Congregation for Bishops and the Congregation for Causes of Saints, being a member of those congregations is a major responsibility. I feel it especially strongly in the Congregation for Bishops, which were asked to study extensive documentation on each candidate who was being proposed for appointment as a bishop, and that we have to give our judgment in the matter. Clearly, the Holy Father's judgment is what makes the bishop, but he looks to us who are the members of the congregation to give him wise counsel. And when you consider that a bishop is going to be shepherd of a numerous flock, he's going to have responsibility for so many souls, you have a very strong sense of needing to do your very best to study these documents very carefully and to give the Holy Father the best possible counsel.
That was the newly created Cardinal Raymond Burke, Prefect of the Apostolic Signatura, talking to my colleague Tracy McClure. Another American who was created a cardinal this weekend was Archbishop Donald Wuerl of Washington. He spoke to journalists this week about his concern for the place of religion in public life and the culture of society, saying that religious values that are woven into the very fabric of U.S. history are no longer welcome there.
Well, the very first topic has to do with religious freedom and the diminishment, the increasing diminishment of religious freedom. And I'm not just talking about around the world, but it's true on a global level. We just saw the violence in Iraq. I mean, there are places around the world where you simply cannot openly worship. You cannot have a Catholic church. You cannot have a Christian community openly celebrating the sacraments. I think that's something that we, as a people, the people on this planet, need to be concerned about. There are places where freedom of conscience and freedom of religion are simply denied for lots of reasons. But I'm concerned about in our own country, we're seeing now a rewriting of how freedom of conscience and freedom of religion is being interpreted. It used to be that we always made room for conscientious objection. We always made room for religious exemption. And now there are those that basically say freedom of religion means you can worship in your house of worship, but it can't overflow and have any impact on our culture. That religious values that are woven right into the fabric of our history are no longer welcome. And I think that's something we need to be very, very aware of and very alert to.
Cardinal Wuerl says the secularism, materialism, and the individualism of contemporary society is a key challenge for the church today.
The issue the church has to face, the issue that people of faith have to face, is the changing world in which we live. The secularism. When the Pope was here in our country, he identified three major hurdles, barriers to preaching the gospel. The secularism, which doesn't look beyond the horizon of today. It doesn't think of a relationship with the transcendent, a relationship with God, even though many, many of our younger people today are finding that that's an essential part of life. If you're going to have a truly balanced life, you need to recognize the spiritual part of your life. The second is the materialism. I think the consumer society that we so often brag about is a society focused on things and the accumulation of things. And that very, very much tends to limit your horizon. And the third is the individualism. We are so caught up in the focus on ourselves, our rights, our needs, that we tend not to pay a lot of attention to our interdependence with the people around us, the community, the common good, and in the church, the whole idea that there would be a magisterium that calls you to action around absolute principles and faith commitment. So all of that is the context, and I think that's the great challenge of the church today. How do you preach Jesus risen and present in this secular, material, individualistic world? How do you help someone understand that you can actually encounter the risen Christ and have a living relationship with God? That's our challenge. That's our task. But it's been that way for 2,000 years.
That was the newly created Cardinal Donald Wuerl, Archbishop of Washington. One of the new cardinals from Africa is Medardo Joseph Mazombwe, the retired Archbishop of Lusaka in Zambia, who has helped mediate political disputes in his country. I asked Cardinal Mazombwe what first led him towards the priesthood when he was young.
The first influence was my father was a catechist, but a definitive time when I was really touched was when I first met major seminarians who had 2 weeks holiday in my home parish. They saw me serving Mass and they asked me, Medardo, would you like to become a priest? At that time, I was attracted by the work of my father, who was catechizing and at the same time teaching literacy. I said, no, I never thought of becoming a priest, but I want to be a teacher. And they said, well, these things are not opposing each other. You can be both a teacher and a priest. And then that very year, 1943, a bishop was visiting. I just said, I would like to go to the seminary.
Okay, fast forwarding to the present, did you ever think that one day you'd become a cardinal?
Well, no, not at all. I never could ever imagine that I would one day become a cardinal. I was a priest. I was teaching in the preparatory seminary in a state high school. I was teaching all the time because my bishop gave me the opportunity to train as a teacher. And that's what I enjoyed. And afterwards, as a director of vocations, I never thought I would ever be a bishop or an archbishop or a cardinal. That was something that was beyond my thoughts.
What are the main pastoral challenges facing the church in Africa and also particularly in your home country of Zambia?
First of all, on the continent of Africa, I would say the church in Africa is experiencing the fastest numerical growth ever experienced in the church at this moment. That is true, and it's a blessing, and that is also true of my own home country. But there are challenges that this fast numerical growth is not matched with maturity. Lots of influences are affecting our faith, in particular the Pentecostals. They are bringing in a spirit that attracts the young people who are not yet sufficiently rooted in their faith. I say now, a great challenge now is we want to have programs of ongoing formation in our faith because we want to reach a certain level of maturity. A good number of people are baptized today and tomorrow. They are in another way of life, which is very often contradictory to what they believed in when they were baptized. And I feel also that the promotion of vocations in our country is very, very important because the growth numerically is a big challenge and we cannot cope with the number of people ministering to these people. But at the same time, to make it as much as possible that everybody is a participant in the building of the church so that in that way all of us feel jointly in that communion of believers responsible for the growth of the church.
I was talking to the newly created Cardinal Medardo Mazombwe from Zambia. A grime-covered crucifix stored for years in the sacristy of a church in Florence has been brought back to life following a major restoration, with most experts now convinced it is the work of the 14th century artist Giotto. Previously, the majority of art historians believe the painted wooden crucifix came from Giotto's workshop in Florence or was the work of a pupil, but was not done by the great artist himself. The restored crucifix has now gone on prominent display in the city's Ogni Santi Church, after being blessed by the Archbishop of Florence at a special Mass. The 7-year cleaning project was carried out by Florence's renowned restoration laboratory, the Opificio delle Pietre Dure, and was headed by art historian Marco Ciatti. He said the restoration and x-rays carried out had removed any lingering doubts about the true origin of the Ogni Santi crucifix, whose vivid colours had been hidden under a thick layer of grime and centuries of candle wax. One of the members of the restoration team for the crucifix was Anna Marie Hilling, whose dissertation was on the Ogni Santi crucifix, and she spoke to me about the stunning results of this restoration.
I think that the restoration of Giotto's Ogni Santi Crucifix has cast a new light on the consideration of this work of art inside the context of Giotto's production, but also inside the context of Christian art at that time. The crucifix before was barely visible because it was kept in the sacristy of the Church of Ogni Santi, so it couldn't be seen. And also it was in very bad conditions because it had a very dark layer on the surface that did not allow to appreciate the beauty of the crucifix. So therefore, this casting new life means the rediscovery of the beauty, of the values, of the emotions that this crucifix can now transmit to the people who look at it.
Now, you said it was in bad condition. So, I mean, was it really very black and grimy? Can you describe what it looked like before you began the restoration?
Before the restoration, Giotto's and his Santi crucifix was dimmed by a very, very dark veil of a very altered layer. It had been touched by candle smoke and lots of debris. So there was this very, very dark layer which did not allow to appreciate the quality of the painting.
And how difficult was the restoration itself? I mean, it took 7 years, so it must have been a big job.
The restoration of the crucifix was extremely difficult because the most difficult part was the cleaning. And the cleaning is a very, very delicate phase of every restoration because it is an irreversible process. What we take away will never be able to come back again. But we decided to remove this very dark layer because it really altered the perception of the work of art. It was not an original layer. And this layer was contained vegetable gum. So therefore, it was something that could be swelled in water, basically. But the layers, the paint layers and the ground layers, were very, very sensitive to water. So the cleaning was very difficult because we had to do it all underneath the control of the microscope, using very limited quantities of water in the specific formulation that we studied for the Ogni Santi crucifix. The cleaning, in fact, itself, on its own, took at least 6 years. And then in the final phases of the restoration, we did the pictorial inpainting. We also restored the wooden supports that Giotto used for the panel. And the final phase of the restoration was also concerned the relocation of the crucifix. We no longer wanted it to go back to the sacristy where nobody could see it. We wanted it to have a good position inside the Church of Ogni Santi so that people can now appreciate it and view it.
When, during the course of this long restoration, did this team of restorers become convinced that the crucifix really had been painted by Giotto, as you saw these vivid colours coming to light?
The restorers were more and more convinced that the work of art was by Giotto himself and not by a collaborator, as the cleaning carried on. And there have never been any doubts that the crucifix was by Giotto's workshop, but how much Giotto was involved in the painting of the crucifix was the question. And more and more, we rediscovered the original parts, seeing the vivid colours that were coming through. More and more, we were convinced that the work of art was, in fact, largely painted by Giotto himself. Giotto always had collaborators that helped him. The gilded background was certainly not done by Giotto, for example. But in this work of art, we are convinced that Giotto certainly painted the main parts, such as the beautiful figure of Christ, such as the figures of the mourners, of the Virgin Mary, of St. John the Evangelist. And the thing that really pinpointed that it was by Giotto himself was at the end, after we had done the cleaning, we carried out an investigation called infrared reflectography. And this investigation with infrared rays allows us also to view the underdrawing, the way how Giotto drew the figure of Christ. And Giotto, in this drawing, always starts to shade the modeling, and he creates very chiaroscuro effect, already diluting black ink underneath the flesh tones of the body of Christ. Well, this drawing was done with such confidence, with such vigorous and quick brushstrokes, that certainly it could not have been done by anybody else than Giotto. It had to be a great artist with great, great experience.
After this restoration, many have commented on the fact that Giotto paints the Virgin Mary as a middle-aged woman with wrinkles around her eyes and mouth. How striking is that? And how unusual was that in paintings of the Madonna in that period?
In the side panel of the crucifix, Giotto paints Mary, the mother of Christ, no longer as an idealized, stylized image of the Virgin, but as an elderly woman with wrinkles along her cheeks, along her eyes, because he wants to accentuate the sorrow of the mother of Christ, who is really suffering for the death of her son. And this was quite unusual for that time, because generally, as I was saying, figures were quite idealized before. And Giotto, in fact, accentuates the natural aspects of living figures. And in fact, his contemporaries say that Giotto's figures looked as though they were really alive.
And what about the figure of Christ painted on this crucifix? There, too, we see his suffering very clearly, don't we?
The dying figure of Christ on the cross is a dying figure, yet at the same time it's also a very monumental and solemn and touching figure. And Giotto actually represents a real man, a man who is suffering, a man who is very accurately described in all his anatomical details. And this also is a very different image of the figure of Christ compared to the previous realizations, the Byzantine ones. And Giotto here represents a real man, a real dying man, with all the aspects of sorrow and pain clearly painted in the expression of Christ's face.
And what were your feelings, your emotions, when you were able to look at the restored crucifix hanging up in the Ogni Santo Church in Florence?
I was thrilled to see the Ogni Santo crucifix being revealed to the public. I had seen it in the church during the phases of preparation with the team of other restorers and all the other people involved. But when it was given back to the congregation of people that were there at the Mass, that actually, in which the crucifix was actually blessed by the Archbishop, it was such an incredible emotion. I was nearly crying when the crucifix was shown in all its beauty and with such good lighting on it.
And altogether, I mean, what kind of an experience was it for you to work on this, such an important restoration work, and see the results, as you say, the dramatic results afterwards?
It has been really an immense satisfaction for me to have the honour and the privilege to work on such a masterpiece, because I really managed to follow every single phase of restoration. I saw the vivid colours coming through gradually during the cleaning. The cleaning lasted 6 years, but each day really revealed a different feature, a different detail that we rediscovered every single day of our restoration. And of course, for me, this was my most important work, and it will probably be forever, maybe, the most important work of my life.
And what's been the feedback from the public, those coming to see the crucifix now hanging in pride of place in the church? Have you had a lot of favourable feedback?
Many people are now going to see the Giotto on the Santi crucifix. And in fact, the priest of the church, Padre Serafino Lanzetto, says that there is actually almost a procession every day coming to see the Ogni Santo crucifix. I am very pleased about this, so that people can be able to see Giotto's masterpiece. And even before the crucifix went back to the church in the months before the inauguration, people were always asking, where is the Ogni Santo crucifix? And so there was a lot of expectation. And so now we are very pleased that people can view not only Giotto's painting, but also the effect of our many years of work.
I was speaking to Anna Marie Hilling, who was one of the restorers of Giotto's Ogni Santo crucifix in Florence.
Well, that's all for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at Vatican Radio's English programme. But we'll be on the air again at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.